Welcome to the Crystal Pain Show, where we help you embrace your life right where you are and give you practical steps to get where you want to go. Whether you are in your car, folding laundry, cooking, cleaning, or maybe even just enjoying a cup of coffee and a few minutes of quiet, we're so glad you're joining us today. Here's your host, wife, mom of six kids, foster mom, entrepreneur, and author, Crystal Pain.
Welcome to another episode of the Crystal Pain Show. I have been so excited about this episode because this is a topic that I get emails and messages every single day. So many women are struggling with how they help prepare their kids to launch them. And so many of my followers have followed me for years, which is amazing and incredible. And now they have teenagers or they are launching their kids and they just feel like, I don't know, like, what have I missed? And so today I get to talk to the one and only Carrie Kempakis. She has a brand new book that is fantastic. Y'all, you got to just go get the book. You don't even need to listen to this episode. I can just tell you, go get this book. It is called, Is Your Daughter Ready? 10 Ways to Empower Your Girl for an Age of New Challenges. And it is about daughters, but I'm going to say, as someone who has a 16-year-old son, I feel like there's so much in here that is also applicable to any teen. So don't be scared off if you're like, well, I have sons, I don't know. Well, there's so much good stuff. And also this episode, even if you don't have girls and you just have sons, you're going to learn so much. So Carrie, this book, what inspired you to like write this book on Is Your Daughter Ready? That's a big topic.
That is a big topic. You know, I think it was after Love Her Well and More Than a Mom came out, I was invited to write another book on parenting by my editors. And so I started thinking, okay, what would I write after Love Her Well? And, you know, that book is about building your relationship with your teenage daughter. And this was post-COVID and just how things have changed so much in the past 5 years. And the theme that kept coming to mind was light and darkness. Mm. And I kept thinking, you know, especially in the Christian world, we're trying to teach our daughters to be a light. And that is so important. But one of my big things as a mom launching my own daughters was like, you know, we live in a broken world and it's never going to be perfect on this side of heaven. And there's darkness out there. And I wanted them to be prepared for that too. So I really wanted to write something that was just practical to give moms that encouragement and that hope to, you know, be able to teach your daughter to be a light and know that she is here to show the love and light of Jesus Christ. But at the same time, don't be naive, you know, to know what you're walking into. And I think part of my heart is that I look back, I mean, I was a child of the 80s and, you know, intentional parenting was not a thing back then. And, you know, we look back, we're like, where were the parents? You know, we kind of raised ourselves and I love our generation. I think we turned out pretty well. We were pretty resourceful, but even going to college and going into new territory, I remember thinking, I wish somebody had told me this. Like I was blindsided by a lot of things. And I can even look back and think I would have made different decisions had somebody given me a heads up. Mm. And so that's always been something important to me to do for my daughters. And so it really hit me when I took my daughter on her first college tour back in 11th grade and just being on the college campus, it brought back so many good memories, but it also triggered some not so great memories and just things that I wish I'd had a forewarning about. And so when we got in the car that day, I just told her, I was like, buckle up, babe, because I'm going to give you the nitty gritty reality of life in college and life beyond home. And it ended up being a 3-hour conversation. And I thought she was going to tune out, but she engaged with me. It was one of the best conversations we've ever had. And when we got home that day, she looked at me and she goes, Mom, that is one of the best conversations we've ever had. I know. So I don't know. I think that's really, that was kind of the start of where this idea came. And I just wanted to be able to share what I've learned as a mom with the moms behind me, because I think they have it even harder than I did 5 years ago when I was raising my daughters and in the thick of it. Mm.
So one of the things that I have noticed, I have a lot of moms who are my friends who are kind of around my son. They have kids around my son's age, which is the 16 age. And so it's like that point where they are needing to, I feel like there's a lot of pressure put on these kids.
Yes.
You need to figure out where you're going to college, what you're doing, what you're going to major in, and all of that. And as someone who's already graduated, two girls who didn't have that all figured out, one of them decided kind of right at the tail end of her senior year and didn't have her major declared, and one decided to take a gap year. And I just have seen how, you know what, it's worked out just fine for them. But what do you say to that mom? Because I feel like the moms are feeling so much pressure and they're also just struggling to navigate, how do we help our kids and how do we know, like, are they ready?
Right. Right. And that's one thing I want to make clear is that, you know, none of us are perfect parents. None of us have a crystal ball. We can't predict every situation our children will be in. And so, you know, that's where we have to just trust God. And my big thing is to do the best we can as moms, but also trust God with the results. And so I'm just a big believer in, and this is something I had to learn the hard way, is trying more instead of parenting with clenched fists and this one idea of how our child's life should look, parenting more with open hands and being like, okay, God, I'm going to trust you here. And I think it's kind of the downside of our parenting in this age of parenting where we're very engaged and we do a lot of intentional parenting. But sometimes it's like, what's that balance between engaged parenting and also trying to control our child's life and thinking we can control the future? And I think most of us who've been parenting for a long time, like you and I have, you've seen enough times where their heart was broken or this didn't work out. But God did something beautiful in that period. And he brought one of their best friends into their life, or he brought a mentor into their life, or opened another door that we never saw coming. And that's really, I think, what we can do as older moms is just reaffirm to these younger moms, like, it's okay. And, you know, as we tell our daughters, you know, like, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, God's going to open the doors for you, the doors that need to be opened. And, you know, just an example of that I share in the book was my daughter. You know, she's a great student, one of them, but really struggled on standardized testing. And she was, you know, so stressed out junior year, trying to take that ACT, had the same score for like 3 or 4 times in a row. She was already studying until like 11 o'clock every night, doing her schoolwork, doing tutors for the ACT. She was worried she wouldn't be able to get into the college that she was planning to go to. And in my heart, I was worried too. And this is where our anxiety as moms can come in. And so anyway, she got her test scores back. It was the same as before. She's just crying. And, you know, part of me wanted to go schedule more tutors for her because that's my reaction is like, we got to double down. But I saw this poor child falling apart in front of me. I'm like, what are we doing? Like, her mental health matters more than anything. And so my husband and I realized we got to take the pressure off of her hair. And so we told her, like, we are not worried about you and we don't want you to be worried about yourself. You know, like, God is going to open the doors that need to be opened. And so you've just got to trust that process. You just do your best and he'll open the doors. And I could see the visible relief on her face. And that's something I probably wouldn't have done 10 years before because I was really trying to control everything. But it relieved her. And, you know, we're like, just do your best. There's nothing more you can do. And the irony of that story is she ended up getting into that college first round. And then she changed her mind and she decided to not even go there. And so now after then, I was like, thank you, God, that I did not follow my first instinct to go double down on tutors and make her more stressed out than she already was. But that was something I had to learn the hard way just from previous experience.
So what does it look like practically? Because I feel like, yes, you know, there's that we want a parent with their hands open. But when it comes to like every day, maybe we see our child making bad choices or we see them kind of going down a path that we feel like this could end up to be really destructive, or they're just being lazy, it feels like. You know, yes. how do we parent with our hands open and trusting God in those types of situations?
Yes. I personally think one of the best things we can do, especially when our kids are in the teenage years and we're struggling like that, I mean, sometimes I would just get on my hands and knees and pray. I mean, God, just humble yourself before the Lord and just, he knows your heart. God, guide me so I can guide her. Tell me what to do. Even if a hard conversation is needed, like, give me the words for that conversation. Show me the right time to have it. Just God, and, you know, just know that when we're praying for something that aligns with God's will, he's our partner. And he wants what's good for them even more than we do. So that always brought me comfort. And then I also think it's so important for us moms to have our village, to have, you know, whether it's your spouse or your friends or your therapist, but people who are pointing to you and encouraging you, especially when your child is making poor choices or not in a great place. Like, and sometimes when I would have just a hard season like that, I would just sit on my porch when I was by myself at home and just open up my Bible. And I'm like, God, just let me feel your love for me. And just sometimes I'm like, I feel like I'm failing. I feel like I'm getting things wrong and I don't know what to do. And I just need to be reminded that you love me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we really struggle with as moms is all these things we teach our daughters and our sons about God's love for them. It's so easy for us to believe that for our children, but yet we don't believe that those same truths are true for us as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think so often that if we don't believe it for ourselves, our kids are paying attention to that. You know, yes. They are seeing more is caught than taught. And I think like the way that we act much more impacts our kids than the words that we say out of our mouth.
Yes, definitely.
You talk in the beginning of the book, I love this example that you talk about how you tend to overpack a suitcase. Yeah. And you talk about how, you know, we want to send off our kids, like when they are going out into the world with suitcases that they're going to carry that are packed really well. But you talk about how we have this tendency to overpack. And you have this list that I'm just going to read because it was so good. You said overpacking may look like being overly critical, micromanaging their lives, expecting perfection, sharing too many corrections at once, sharing too many life lessons at once, forcing a love for God on them, controlling their relationships and decisions, obsessing over their social lives, overscheduling them, living vicariously through them, raising the daughter we want, not the daughter we have, and parenting with a vision of gloom and doom rather than a vision of hope. As I read this list, I was like, this is, you've been in my inbox every single day because this is what I see. Parents are just struggling with every single one of these things. And I wish we had hours to unpack all of these. But one of the things I loved is you talked about raising the daughter we want, not the daughter we have. Talk about that.
Yes, yes. I mean, I think just knowing, and this is one thing you realize when you have a lot of kids, is that every child is so different. I mean, the way you parent them is different. And, you know, like I think you'll hear sometimes a very extroverted mom will be super, super concerned because their child is really quiet and shy and they only have like one or two close friends. And, you know, over time they realize that their child is perfectly happy with that. But it's hard for the mom to understand because she wants a huge social group. She wants tons of invitations. She has a lot of capacity to go out and constantly do things and the child doesn't. And so I think just really becoming a student of our child and seeing, like I said, I think when my kids were little, especially when it's the same gender, I just saw them as my do-over. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I think when they were little, it's like, oh, I hope they're like me, only they can be better. You know, mm-hmm. I can kind of improve upon myself through my children. And then they grew up and they're so different than me. And probably the one that really stood out the most was my second child. You know, she was my strong-willed toddler. And I mean, I look back and I told her recently, I had to tear out pages of your baby book because I just complained about how hard she was. And, you know, and I talk about her strong-willed personality in the book, but I did it all wrong because I was just trying to fix her and I was trying to make her easy. And her older sister was your typical oldest child, very obedient, very compliant. And then she was the child. I'd say, go right. Everybody go right. And she'd go left. I mean, just constantly. And so, you know, I was always fighting that. And then one thing that changed, I think it was a Max Lucado book. And I still cannot figure out which book it was, but I saw a story about a mom with a strong-willed toddler, and she was kind of doing the same thing. This toddler was driving her nuts, and she could not wait for him to get to school because he had so much energy. And anyway, he went on to say that that toddler ended up becoming Billy Graham. Mm. And they realized later that God gave him that energy to be able to go minister across the world and carry out the calling he had. And that just gave me so much hope for my child. Like, I don't know how God is planning to use her. Like, she's not a mistake. And so to really, like, embrace her personality. Obviously, we want to course correct when they're misbehaving or they need discipline. But also, there are certain things about all of our children, their characteristics that are God ordained and that are part of the story God is writing through them. And to really look at that, even if it's different than us.
Mm. That is my second daughter. She's 18. But when she was little, when she was 2 weeks old, she started rolling over intentionally at 2 weeks old.
No.
And because she just wanted to get to the other room. And like,
that's my daughter.
That was just, she had so much energy. And I just prayed like that she would have some sort of fear because she had no fear of anything. And that was very dangerous because she had no fear. But I have seen how God has used this really big, strong personality. She's just this incredible person. And yes, how channeling that in this direction for good,
yes,
is just amazing. But in the beginning, I tried so hard to stuff her into this little box that she didn't fit in.
Right.
And she was always making these big messes of like art. She's very creative. And so she would just, it was like, the art would just throw up in the room is basically what it would look like. And in just 20 minutes, she could just, in my head, it was destroy a room. You know, that's right, what it felt like. And I finally realized, like, God has put her in my life because I need more beauty in my life because I'm much more of a minimalist, utilitarian kind of person. Mm-hmm. And I need someone in my life to help me have that beauty. And now it's amazing because she does hair and makeup. And so she's in cosmetology school, but she'll give me a blowout and curl my hair and she'll help me with my clothes. And all the time I'll come downstairs, she'd be like, Mom, are you going to walk out of the house looking like that? Probably change the shoes, you know, and every time she'll suggest that I change something on my outfit, I'll look later and I'll be like, yeah, she really was right. And yes. I just know that God has her in my life, not just for that, but like to also help me to see the beauty, to notice the beauty. And so what I started doing was we had a room in the house that I said, this is your room that you can create in this room. Mm-hmm. You can have as much art and creativity and whatever, as long as it stays in this room. And like, for me, that was helpful because then she had her space that I was just letting her do whatever in, but then also it wasn't the entire house.
Right.
So, you know, like finding kind of those ways to compromise. So you're celebrating their gifts, but also not loosen your mind in the process.
Right.
So, yes. But it's just been so good for me to see how God knew I needed her. And instead of me trying to fix her, he was actually trying to change me.
Yeah. That's exactly what happened to me. I told her, I was like, you're the reason I started reading Christian books, because I was going to bed so frustrated every night. And I had this friend at the gym who was always so peaceful. And one day I was like, where do you get your peace? Mm-hmm. Like, you are always so calm. You've got three kids. And she goes, I'm going to bring you a book tomorrow. And I was expecting a parenting book, and she showed up the next day, and it was Power of a Praying Mom by Stormy Martian. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that book, it would get my heart in the right place as I was going to bed. And that's what I realized about my daughter, is like channeling that spirit, praying for me to guide it well. And same thing, I'm like, I tell everybody, when she went to college, it was much easier to launch her. Like, I feel like she was really ready. Mm-hmm. You know, she's always been a leader, whether she realized it or not. People would look to her. She had a lot of influence. And so really teaching, just really embracing their personality and seeing that they're not a mistake. Mm-hmm. Even if, and she also encourages me to be more brave.
Yes.
Know? And when I need something done, like if we're trying to do Christmas shopping, I mean, like, she's the child to take with me. Like, we can get so much done because she is driven. She has energy. She is passionate. And, you know, it's the exact same things that used to drive me nuts when she was little. They're really the best qualities today. Mm-hmm.
And so seeing that in our kids, like when they're little, I just encourage every mom. One of the things we intentionally didn't call her strong-willed, because I always just chose to say strong, because I feel like that's that kind of changes the strong-willed has such a kind of negative connotation. And so I always just say, she is my strong daughter. And my husband's like, and she's kind of just like you, because you're really strong too. Just to realize, like, oh yes, that's right. One of my childhood memories is creating handmade gifts for our grandparents and aunts and uncles. Every Christmas season, all of us kids, there were seven kids in my family growing up, we would hand make a gift for each of our aunts and uncles and grandparents. And I just remember so much the joy and fulfillment that would come from the hours that we would put into those gifts and then getting to see them being opened on Christmas. And this reminds me of KiwiCo, because they create crates that don't just sit on a shelf, but they invite kids to build something memorable. And we have actually encouraged grandparents to give these as gifts for our kids as they have been growing up. And I love that our kids have learned so many skills. They've gotten that same fulfillment. And it's kind of the gift that keeps on giving, because it shows up in the mail and our kids get all excited. Month after month, they remember their grandparents or their loved ones who gave them that gift, and they get to create something with their hands. I also love that these are screen-free gifts. You're not just giving a child a gift when you give them a KiwiCo crate. You're giving them the tools to create their own fun. And every crate is designed to spark hands-on discovery, from a delivery bot that gets wheels turning to a candle carousel that's spins with science. KiwiCo turns gifting into making, and also helps kids be able to explore different things like science, technology, engineering, art, and math through projects that are both fun and skill building. And I just think that if you are looking for a creative gift to give another child, or you're looking for a gift idea for grandparents or other loved ones in your life,
I can't recommend KiwiCo enough. It is something that our family has loved for many, many years. Tinker, create, and innovate with KiwiCo. Get up to 50% off your first crate at KiwiCo.com using promo code Crystal. That's up to 50% off your first crate at KiwiCo.com, promo code Crystal.
One of the things that you talk about in your book is teaching our kids discernment. And I think this is so important. I was actually raised in a very different culture than you because I was homeschooled. And so my parents were very, very involved in my life, but they did pretty much all the decision making for me. And so I never really learned how to make decisions until I became an adult. And so that is something that then as a parent trying to figure out, how do I help my kids learn that at a younger age, because it was really hard to figure out, okay, what are my standards? What are my boundaries when it came to lots of different things?
Right.
I'd never experienced it because I was just told, like, here's the rules. You just follow the rules.
That's so good.
So how do we do this and help our children really start to develop that discernment and for themselves to learn to seek the Lord?
Yeah. You know, I think that what I was always thinking in the back of my mind is that I had a friend who once said this. You know, she told her older son, I can't be your Holy Spirit. You know, he was making some not so great choices. And I would always tell my kids, you got to want a good life for yourself more than I want it for you. But yeah, and I think just really that spirit of discernment to be able to judge relationships, and especially with girls. I can't speak for boys, but I know myself, and I know I've been working with girls and moms for 10 years. We have female intuition is a real thing. And I think God speaks to us so often through our intuition. And even like with work, I mean, there's so many things that I say yes to because it's a gut instinct. And, you know, even speaking events, sometimes I'll get an email and I'm like, this just does not feel right. And then it'll be somebody else. And I'm like, I don't know anybody in this town, but this just feels right. I know to trust my gut. And so an example of this, you know, when girls go to college campuses and visit colleges, I'm always like, you know, think about how it makes you feel. Like, it could be the best tour in the world. It could be the best campus in the world. But does it feel like home? Like, think about how you're feeling inside, because you're the one who's going to be living here for 4 years. Versus, you know, I have a friend that she talked about, a mom in her school that was kind of complaining her daughter's senior year. She's like, I'm so frustrated. She will not make a choice. And my friend was like, I couldn't say this to her, but, you know, she told her daughter, you can't go to these three state schools. Like, she'd forbidden her to look at like six schools that a lot of the kids at her school were going to. And I was like, I'm thinking she's really doing that daughter a disservice, because she's going to get to college and not know how to trust her gut instincts because she doesn't know how to do it. And so I think it can just start when our kids are little, you know, when you're playing with somebody and how does it make you feel, you know, when somebody takes your toy or when somebody's, you know, hurtful to you, like, does that feel like a safe friend or not? And so if it doesn't, then you might have to talk about, okay, we might need to put up some little boundaries there. But just knowing that, you know, which relationships are the one that you give level 10 access to versus the relationships you give level 2 access to. That I say, some people you love up close and personal. You have that discernment that this feels right. This feels good, that you're drawing me closer to God. And then other people that you just kind of have that sense like something doesn't feel safe. You don't think they have your best interest in mind. And so I'm like, you can be friendly, you can make small talk, but you're not going to go tell them your deepest, darkest secrets. And so I think that that's one of the best things and most important things with our children is teaching them what do those safe and healthy relationships look like in friendship and dating versus the unsafe ones.
And so what are some red flags when it comes to, I'd love to talk about like friendship and dating, like a separate thing. So in friends, because I'd think with girls, especially like you talked about in the book, which I'd never heard someone else like say this, but I've always said this, I feel like around the age 16, it feels like, at least for both of my girls and pretty much all girls that I know around that age, it's like they go through this kind of shift in friends. And it seems like there's just like this big, there's just a lot of challenges around that time frame. And so how have you helped your girls know what are good, safe, healthy friends?
Yes. I think a lot of it goes back to your gut instincts. The one concept that has helped girls probably more than anything I've shared, it was in my first book, and I call it 50-50 friends versus real friends. You know, who your real friends are. They're consistent. They're loyal. If you miss school for 3 days, they notice, they check on you. Like, those are your friends who will probably still be your friends 20 years from now. the 50-50 friends, and we've all had them, and maybe we've been a 50-50 friend at some point, but you know, they might be nice to you one day, they're planning your birthday party, and then 2 days later, they're giving you the cold shoulder, and you're always kind of walking on eggshells around them because you're not sure if you're going to, you know, trigger them. You're not sure they're mad at you, but you don't know why, and they're talking about it with everybody else, but not with you. And so I think it's just kind of good to know, like, who are the safe friends? And so those are big red flags, just somebody that just, you know, they don't have your best interest in mind. You get the feeling that maybe they might talk about you when you're gone, that somehow after you're with them, you feel worse about yourself. You feel like you need to change everything rather than just be accepted like you are. And, you know, the big one, it was, I got this from a father who would say this to his daughters about boys that they were dating, that he would say, if a boy ever tries to come between you and God, he wasn't sent by God. Mm. And I thought that is so true about friends too. You know, if you are embarrassed to talk about your faith in front of your friends, or you're embarrassed to say that you're going to church, or you say something about God and it's just crickets, it's not that they're bad people, but those might not be the best people that are going to bring out the best version of you. You know, you can be friends, but maybe it's a level 2 or 3 friendship rather than the people that you trust the most. Mm. And the other thing I tell girls too is, you know, I saw this firsthand, and you probably did too, having younger kids. Like my poor youngest, Camille, you know, we would do some play dates after Mother's Day out. But besides that, she never had play dates. You know, like she didn't have a lot of friends when she was little because I was focused on the older girls. But that child did not miss a beat, because what would happen is the older friends would come over and she would sit there on the porch, you know, saying, I was like, what are you doing? I'm waiting for my friend Grayson to come over. She thought it was her friend because the sister's friends were so sweet to her. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the biggest sign, is somebody that's good for you not only draws you closer to God, but they're going to bring harmony into your home. They're going to be sweet to your mom. They're going to be sweet to your younger siblings. Somebody that's not good for you is going to cause division in your closest relationships. And I've had a lot of friends who went through this with their daughter and a friend or a boyfriend, that maybe they start lying to their mom or fighting with their dad, thinking that their little brother is an even bigger pest than before because their friend is always talking about that. And so I think just kind of knowing the differences between those, and instinctively, I think we know it, but a lot of times we don't tune into it. Mm. So I think really just teaching our daughters and sons to tune into it. Mm.
And so I'm sure you've had this situation where you see some red flags in a relationship, but your child is not seeing those red flags. And so what do you do in that situation?
Oh, that is so tricky. Yeah. I had one, she had a little boyfriend in 8th grade, and it was that situation, kind of an Eddie Haskell situation. And he was so confident. He'd come up to me and my husband and just, hey there, I always wanted to shake our hands. And I'm like, he's too smooth. I would much rather have a little boy who's shaking and like scared, but trying to, you know, shake our hand. But it was not a good situation. And I remember talking to a friend, and she was like, pray for it to last for a season. Mm-hmm. So that became my big prayer. I'm like, God, please. And you, as you know, you got to be kind of careful in these situations, because you make somebody their forbidden fruit and then they just want that relationship more. But you know, it was also, she was lying to us. Her grades were dropping. Like there were a lot of things, and the fruit in her life was not looking so good. And so just a lot of prayer. And then in this situation, like he would message her on Instagram. And so I was having to check her technology a lot more. And, you know, I saw something that's like, you know, tell your mom this. And I'm like, he's telling you to lie. So some things like that, I would just flat out call out. And so I'm like, you know, that's a red flag right there. And so I really, it was one of those things that worked itself out. Like, mm-hmm. I think that he ended up moving on to somebody else and they broke up, and I'm like, thank you, God. He's a delightful person now, but this was, you know, back in 8th grade. And so I think, but I have a friend too that, you know, it was a bigger situation than that it was a really, really unhealthy relationship. And her husband had to step in and said, you cannot date him. And sometimes that needs to happen. And especially with dating, I tell people, I think, you know, and if you don't have a husband, if there's an uncle or a grandfather, I think there are some things that the girl just needs to hear it from a prominent male figure in her life. And so there are a lot of things with dating. I'm like, Harry, this is your territory. I mean, I can give them advice all day, but what you say is going to stick with mm-hmm. them, and it's going to really resonate. Mm-hmm. So I think when it's something like that, then getting dad involved or the grandfather, whoever is that male role model in their life who has their back and looks out for them, they're going to take it differently coming from them than they would be, mm-hmm. they would their mom.
I also think having that male role model to kind of vet the guy too. Yes. It's really, really important. Like, is the guy being really respectful and having a conversation and like really, you know, going and asking for permission for things and that sort of thing versus just, I feel like if they're not willing to respect that, that is a big sign of a red flag.
Yes, definitely.
So what are some other things when it comes to dating? Like, how have you prepared your girls? Have you set boundaries, rules, things like that? Or how have you approached it?
It's tricky. The main thing I teach mine is like, just begin as friends, you know, like, and don't rush it. I mean, even in seventh and eighth grade, when, we like each other, I'm like, don't rush it. I'm like, he's a good boy. He's a good guy, but you might really have a chance of dating him when you're 16 or 17. But if you date everybody when you're in seventh and eighth grade, they've dated you already. And you kind of ruin your chance of like, maybe, you know, circling back around later. So I always tell them that, you know, really the most important thing I think they can take from their dating years is friendship. And I always emphasize how that's half of a marriage, you know, especially in those hard seasons. Like, you've got to have that friendship in place because sometimes the romance isn't there. And, you know, you go through hard times and you want to have that strong friendship. And I think that's really something they can learn as they're dating. And also a priest once said this, I heard him say that dating is about rejection and it's about finding the one person you're meant to marry. And the example he gave was that, you know, you might go on one date with somebody and you know immediately that you're not compatible because you're just no chemistry. So that's fine. But then there might be somebody else. It might take 6 months to get to those hidden qualities that make you realize you're not compatible. And it might be something small like, okay, he won't ever hold my hand in public. He's very, you know, doesn't want to tell anybody he's my boyfriend. Well, that's important to me. And so you realize that moving forward, like, this is not, he's a great person, but just not the right one for you. And so I think just teaching them that, you know, even if, and this is true, you know, if they break up with you or you break up with them, it's kind of part of the process. It's very normal because you're only finding that one person you're going to marry. But every relationship you have, you learn something. Mm-hmm. Even if it's one date, you're learning something. And so, so my youngest daughter, she's got a sweet little group of girlfriends, and then they kind of merged with a sweet group of guys last year. And they, really, it was between my daughter and one of the boys in the group. They were talking about Bible verses. They were not your typical ninth graders, but they kind of bonded over that. Like, we should get our friends together. And so anyway, so they're a big friend group now. But I was asking her earlier this year, I was like, any romances or anything? She's like, no. She's like, I feel like they're all my cousins. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, bingo. That is what we want in 10th grade, you know? And then a lot of times, as we know, a lot of times those friendships do evolve into more. Mm-hmm. I mean, my husband, I was friends with him in college. Not best friends, but we were friends for 4 years before we ever started dating. Mm-hmm. So you never know what might happen.
I also think there's so much value in getting to know them in a lot of different situations when it's like, yes, there's not a label attached. So they're not trying to be somebody. You know, yes, I think sometimes, yes, like if you're in a dating relationship, it's like, oh, I'm supposed to be this kind of person. But if you're just in a friendship, or maybe you're just kind of viewing them from afar and kind of knowing them as an acquaintance, you see their true character. And we always, yes, tell our kids, like, don't be in a hurry. Like, take, yes, your time. Don't, yes, settle. And, yes, like, really pay attention and watch their character, mm-hmm, over time in a lot of different situations. Yes. And that really tells you who they are as a person. I also think, you know, them coming into our home, like both of our girls, their boyfriends have spent so much time in our home with our family, gone on trips with our family. Like, you really get to see, yes, their character in a lot of situations when they're outside their normal routine, when, you know, yes, it's children are crying because we have little kids, you know, and like there, you really get to see a lot about who they are as people. And I think there's been a lot of value in that. And just, you know, you don't have to be in a rush. Like, that's, yes, what I was telling kids, like, don't rush this. There's no reason to rush it. One of the things you talk about in your book is hard conversations. And that's a thing that we have to have. I mean, we need to have. I think a lot of parents kind of avoid the hard conversations because they're scary. Yes. And so how have you approached that when you need to address something, you need to have that hard conversation? And maybe, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced it where you're like, I don't want to do this, but I need to.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and I talk about this, and I did a post on this recently that, you know, usually, especially when you have multiple kids, like, you're not going to be an expert on day one, and you have to give yourself grace. And one of the best things I heard when my kids were little was I heard about setting the first tracks. Like, that's what you want to do as a parent. And what it is you imagine that there's a ski slope, and it is like a fresh blanket of snow. It is perfect and pristine. And your child is standing at the top of this slope, and they're looking down, and everything's perfect. And that's their young mind. But pretty soon people are going to ski down and put tracks in the snow. And whoever sets the first tracks of a conversation is going to leave a particularly deep impression. And so what we want to do as parents is we want to ski down and put the first tracks down. We want to, you know, establish God's truth so that when other tracks come down, they know which tracks to trust. So that was just something that helped me be brave in having these conversations. My oldest daughter still says, she tells me now, the talk, the first time we did the talk with her, you know, I forget how old she was, but she was like, I dreaded it all week. It was awful. It's one of my most traumatic childhood experiences. I'm like, it was traumatic for me too. Harry and I knew, we did not know what we were doing. You know, we didn't grow up with parents who had those conversations with us. And so, so we were learning, but you know, by Camille, I've gotten pretty good at it. And so I've realized it's not a one-time thing. It's just little things here and there. And, you know, the beauty of us as moms is we're always with our kids. You know, we're driving them around. We're taking them to the doctor. So I think it's good to know what conversations you want to have and then look for opportunities that make sense to have those conversations. And so even we had so many conversations, like when I got rid of my car, I had a big Suburban for years. I was really sad. I was sentimental. I'm like, man, so much has happened in that car. Like that is where we had so many conversations as I'm driving them to school. And, you know, sometimes I'd share stories. And like I said, it's easy to talk about dating before they're dating somebody. So I talk about, you know, y'all, I forget how this came up, but one time I was like, yeah, I had a friend that dated this guy that I did not like. He was kind of bad news in college, but she didn't see it. He was a charmer to her. He'd buy her Louis Vuitton bags and all of this. And anyway, they dated for a year. She knew I wasn't crazy about him, but you can't really do much. But I was like, you know, anyway, she finds out a year later that he's been cheating on her and doing drugs basically the whole time they were dating. And I was like, you know, she realized after the fact that she'd be like, you know, now I look back and I realized we'd be at a party and he'd leave for 10 minutes and then he'd come back and he wanted to dance and he'd have a different look in his eyes. She's like, I know now that's when he was probably off doing drugs, but she didn't see it at the time. And so I think sometimes it's easier to like kind of have those conversations, just share those stories in advance so that if our kids are ever in a similar situation, I think that can kind of help them tune in to like, something's not right here. Mm-hmm. Something's a little bit funny. And it's a little bit more innocuous when it's, you know, somebody else's story versus something that they're going through. Mm. But, you know, I think, you know, obviously age appropriate ways, but I think just building up those little conversations and knowing that our kids are typically not going to come to us and say, Mom, will you talk to me about pornography? You know, so it's really up to us to be proactive and to have those conversations in age appropriate ways.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that's so good. And I think recognizing that, you know, they're going to be exposed to those things. Mm-hmm. And so how do we prepare them ahead of time and not scare them,
right,
but just make right. them aware? And I do think like talking about other situations and asking our kids, you know, what would you have done in that situation? Or, you know, is there something that you think they could have done differently to prevent whatever happened? You know, especially I've found as our daughters, you know, they would be friends with girls that were a little bit older than them. And they, mm-hmm. those girls would go through a breakup and they'd see, you know, how the guy treated them or whatever. And then that would be such a great opportunity for us to have a conversation about that. And, you know, they'd be really upset about it. And, you know, to just kind of say, okay, well, were there some red flags that they saw ahead of time? And okay, what can we learn from this? And I think that that's really helped to be able to have it where it wasn't about them. So then when it, you know, something happened with them, they were more aware of, oh, I'm seeing the same pattern that I saw before and it wasn't a good thing. Yes. I need to get out now kind of thing.
Exactly.
That's really good. Well, there's so much more in your book, so much practical, so much encouragement. I just feel like every single parent would benefit from reading this book, whether you have younger kids or whether you have older kids, even if your kids are already, you've already launched them. I feel like there's so much here that could encourage a parent. And so get a copy of this book, Is Your Daughter Ready? 10 Ways to Empower Your Girl for an Age of New Challenges. It is packed full of encouragement, inspiration, practical advice, and it will probably step on your toes a little bit, but in a very good way. It's stepping on mine, and I'm so grateful. I feel like this is a handbook that I need for the season of life I'm in. So thank you, Carrie, so much for coming on the podcast. And I'm just so excited for how many lives this book is going to impact. I just think of the ripple effect of so many families and girls who are going to be really impacted to have that suitcase that is packed with love and not overpacked with all of those dysfunctional, unhealthy things so that girls can go out in the world and be better prepared. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I loved it.
Thank you for joining us today. For more great resources, please visit crystalpayne.com.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.